is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1025. And it's a Relevant Podcast here in Orlando. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, it's Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
Hello, hello.
Shut up. And down the street there in Nashville, downtown Emily Brown is joining us, but she's wrapping up an interview with Beth Moore right now. So she's gonna be a few minutes late.
Okay. Oh, okay. I didn't, you know.
So
okay.
Auntie Beth took, you know, ran long. So, you know.
I mean, you know, okay.
God bless Beth Moore, by the way. I'm not even on Twitter that much.
Right.
You know, I'm more of a lurker. I just, you know, my contributions to the content world at this point are pretty much restricted. I save my takes for this. Cameron, I see your takes generally are just Orlando Magic insider knowledge or debating with like Kyle Cerruti or some Magic media personality
whatever. That's true.
Like where I just save my takes. But I'm on there enough just because I like to be in the know. I like to see what's happening. I like to see what Elon's, you know, whatever he's kicking up over there.
Yeah.
But is there anyone who takes more, sorry, I'm just going to say it, more crap from random people on Twitter than Beth Moore and handles it with such grace, poise, and honestly, like, for as like funny and sharp as she is, like genuine Christ-likeness, like in that she's never like insulting people, but even though she's on the forefront, it's pretty impressive the way that she deals with trolls. I'm not going to lie.
I don't get it. I like when I see how some people talk to her, I'm just like, I can't wrap my head around what that person was thinking to do that or say that, you know, like to treat somebody that way. It's crazy.
If you would have rewound, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years in my mind, and this is no shade on Beth Moore. She's been very successful writer and teacher. But I usually thought of her as like, at the time, my main frame of reference is like a lot of like women's mom-centric Bible studies. Like, oh, it's a Beth Moore. If you would have told me 15 years ago, she would become one of the number one lightning rods in terms of like Christian thought leaders who are really, I would have been shocked. But I am a huge fan, and I'm so stoked she's on the show. I really admire.
Well, she's not on the show. She's not on the show today. She's on a future show.
Well, she'll be at the show at some point.
Crazy part about it, though, is the people that's always dissing her are the same. I feel like it's the same dude. Like it's always the same dude. It's the guy with this goatee. It's partially gray. He has on some baseball goggles or like the baseball shades that you put on. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. He's wearing Air Monarchs. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, and I'm like, dog, you got a whole family to raise, bro. You got a wife and kids. Like your wife and kids are watching you, man. Like, why are you acting this way?
I know,
Beth
right?
Moore, like if this was real life, they would send you to jail. Like somebody, if you were talking to her like this in the grocery store, like there would be some guys that would be like, man, I'm finna beat this dude up. And I'm like, bro, you acting like this in front of the whole world.
This is real talk. You know, there's no segment of the population where it's easier to live rent-free in their heads than like the Theo bros, like theology bros.
My goodness,
like
bro.
The ones that kind of lean a little bit more fun. And I'm not like bashing them. Like people should be able to believe and think whatever they want.
Yeah, they got that ugly gray suit where half of it is kind of disheveled and they got like a red or a peach
but not
shirt.
Even just them. Not even just them. Some of the younger ones that are kind of run and some of those like reformed. Yeah. And I'm not like talking about anybody who has any theological leaning.
But y'all are jerks.
The type I'm talking about. Like it's like dudes who work for like the Babylon Bee. It's like you can say one thing and live rent free, and then they just will randomly go off on Beth Moore, even though she did nothing to them. It's like they just get obsessed with minor what they perceive as like minor slights. Either to their theology or their values and just call stuff on Twitter for no reason. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong here?
No, you're dead on.
And I'm not even going to lie. Listen, I'm like, I saw Cameron sent me this post. I think he retweeted it. And it was this dude that said, this is the guy that disses Beth Moore. Yeah. It's the guy that says, he says, if you're an alpha male, you don't have to announce it or something. And then in his Twitter name, it's his name in parentheses, alpha male. It is that guy. It is a dude that's like, bro, this is not what an alpha male acts like, bro. You are way too sensitive.
The tweet was, a real alpha male doesn't have to announce he's an alpha male. When he walks in the room, everybody knows it. And his name was his name with alpha male in it. I was like, you're literally announcing that you think you're an alpha male. Shouldn't we just know it? Oh, it's so great. It's so great. The cell phone.
It was the best cell phone ever.
It's like, for those people, the biggest issues facing America right now are drag queens at brunches and Disney recasting a character to be like,
yeah,
black,
not white,
like,
yeah,
black Little Mermaid, like, and slights against masculinity. Those are the issues that we should be actually, or what's actually on the shelves at your public library school. It's like, those are the issues that are sweeping the country in this little weird corner that just likes to randomly go off on Beth Moore sometimes. I'm sorry I'm ranting here, but I don't feel like I'm misrepresenting totally the trend that's out there.
Did you, speaking of libraries, totally unrelated, did you see Kirk Cameron has a kids Christmas book out, and he called a library to say, hey, I'd like to come and read my book for your kids' story hour. And they were like, oh, no, it's a religious book. We can't do that, whatever. And so then he went online talking about how he's being persecuted and cancel culture and all this stuff. Because he called a library and they said, no, thank you. We don't need you to come read this kids your book. Like, it's victim mentality. Everything's like out to get
Let's
us
get
and
it.
Stuff.
Relevant,
like
Relevant Magazine, hot. Let's
I had, come a, I had a whole nother banter take. This, folks, behind the curtain. This is just organic. We just all, I think all three of us had to vent from what we've seen.
Alpha males.
Because I'm like, of all the people you could be mad at, Beth Moore literally could get on there and just say, hey guys, it's a beautiful day and it's sunny outside and I just love spending time by myself in the park.
And the response would be this. Notice what she didn't say about God's ability to save you from sin. Telling. And you're like,
this poor woman is just out here trying to get some coffee and latte in time with God. Daryl is going crazy in her Twitter.
The thing that I don't get about those people, not those people, but like people in general on Twitter who pick fights all the time or criticize every post, the person, like the trolls, you know what I mean?
Right,
it's not
right.
just those guys. There's trolls everywhere. It's like, why? Why do you want to live your life following accounts that trigger you and upset you? Yes. Why don't you just let bygones be bygones, let them live in their lane, you live in your lane, and don't follow them? You know, I get that people have disagreements and want to, like, they get triggered, but it's like, why are you doing that to yourself? Just let Beth Moore live on her ranch and enjoy her bees and the dogs and the trees that she looks at and takes pictures of sometimes. It's like, let
her
live.
Saying. There's so many people that live rent-free in these people's heads that are just like, they stay up at night stewing over someone that they've probably never met. And then they decide to get on Twitter and like pick a weird fight. You know,
imagine Mickey Mouse triggering you to the level of you go argue about Disney on everything you see with Disney, bro. Imagine being triggered by a cartoon mouse to that level. That's crazy.
The best thing I ever did was a couple of years ago when everything was so heated and everybody was so arguing on social media. It's just like, unfollow all of it. I hit a hard reset on my follower, like what I followed, because it's like, I'm all basketball and jokes. That's literally my Twitter feed. And I love it. But it was before I hated going on Twitter because it was all negative and heavy and people were arguing. And it's like, you know what? I'm just going to turn all that off. And it's like, I feel happier and lighter and I can joke around about the magic being terrible. And it's all good. You know what I mean? It's like, people, why follow the stuff that triggers you?
Yeah, exactly. Because the biggest grenade you're going to say is like, Bol Bol's better than Chet Holmgren. And guess what? No one's going to come after you personally for that take.
That is a hot take, and I agree with you.
I mean, honestly, right now, if you were to have either player.
Take Bol Bol all day long, man. All right.
You know, 29 the other night.
We have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, Fitz and the Tantrums joins us. Love that band. That's coming up. No Beth Moore. She'll be in a future episode after we heavily edit the interview that ran long. Who knows what they're talking about, but I'm sure it's hot. All right, Fitz and Tantrums. Also, right after this, Emily will join us for Relevant Buzz. Stay tuned. To Dayglow, the song is Then It All Goes Away. Hey, remember, if you like the music on the show, we have a playlist. Everything you hear, it's called Heard on the Relevant Podcast. It's over on Spotify. You should go check it out. It's a good list. There's lots of stuff there.
The wait is officially over. Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, is out now. Following up on her Grammy-nominated debut album, My Jesus, her sophomore project is jam-packed with 16 songs and features guest artists including Chris Tomlin, Lainey Wilson, and Jordan Davis. Blending her love for God with her roots in all things country, Ann is a true rebel in modern music. Be sure to check out Ann Wilson's newest album, Rebel, available now everywhere you listen to music.
Okay, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
Please welcome to the show. She got here. Perfect timing. our very own downtown Emily Brown. Tell us, before we get to what's happening at the intersection of faith and culture this week, before we get to the buzz, we got to know how to go with Beth Moore.
Oh, it was great. We both cried, so that's always a good goal to have. Just really great.
What? Did you guys read like a really mean tweet?
Something upsetting?
No, we did not read. No, no mean tweets were mentioned. Well, they were mentioned, but no mean tweets were shared. I don't know. There's something about two Texas women getting together. It's just an emotional meeting. It was good tears. It was happy tears. We were just really nice to each other. But that is definitely probably going to be one of my most memorable interviews. Yeah, it was great.
When you interviewed Fitz and the Tantrums, did you cry?
So no. no offense to Fitz and the Tantrums. It just wasn't as emotional. But I also wasn't expecting it to be emotional. So I kind of knew I was going to cry with Beth. There's just something about her.
Emily, how with what frequency do you cry in interviews? Because I'm trying to think.
I can tell you in job interviews all the time.
Yeah, that's how I got the job. I just cried until they said, okay, fine, we'll hire you.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. This is so weird. If you'll stop, I'll hire you. This is awful. Please make it stop. That's what I said.
Yeah, that's a little pro tip for anyone looking for a job.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
But real talk, have you cried in an interview before with anyone?
Have I cried in it? Oh, absolutely. I have. Yeah.
I like that. I like that real emotional vulnerability.
Oh, it's always great when I have to wipe my eye and say, sorry, this is just crying. Like, I think it's because I just want to go deep. Like, I don't really want to do a lot of like fluff questions. So we're going to talk about real things and I'm going to cry about real things. And I'm not ashamed of that. I used to be when I was younger. I don't know why, but I've learned to really embrace my emotions. I think I'm getting emotionally healthy or maybe unhealthy. I don't know. Maybe this is a sign that I need to do some work.
It's healthy, Emily.
I actually had a similar, I'm going to take my son, who's 9, to see the new Avatar when it comes out. Because I thought the first one with like the 3D experience was rad. I remembered almost nothing about the plot. But it's the first one's on Disney Plus. So I told him, like, hey, you should start watching it. So when we go see it in 3D, you'll know the plot. And I woke up this morning, I was drinking coffee and he's watching it on Disney Plus. And I came in during the when they're burning down Home Tree. I don't know if you guys remember. It's been about 13 years since I saw Avatar one time in the theater. And I actually was getting kind of emotional in that little 5-minute stretch. Maybe I'm just getting older. And to your point, Emily, the older you get, you know, they're just the more, you know, sensitive you are. But watching that Home Tree burn, whoo, watching those blue guys. Whoa. Guys, hey, run that back sometime and you tell me. You tell me it's not emotional. Derek, you're not even acknowledging the pain.
Yeah, I'm out on this one. Y'all got it. This is
yeah.
I was lost. Like, I remember when Avatar came out and people was like, it was people crying and yeah, all of that. I was like, over some blue people? Like, it didn't make sense.
The Na'vi, they're a beautiful culture, Derek.
Yeah.
Who've learned to live at oneness with the wilds of Pandora.
So it's fake. A lot
that we can learn.
It's not real.
There's a lot we can learn.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway.
I don't want Avatar gang to come after me because they probably pretty intense. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want Avatar smoke.
All right. You don't want Avatar smoke.
All right. Moving the show along. What's happening this week at the intersection of faith and culture, Emily?
Moving on from blue people, we're going to talk about real people now. We're going to talk about Elon Musk. I know. We talk about him a lot. But praise God, we're finally not talking about Twitter and how what he's doing over there. We're going to talk about his Neuralink company because they are actually doing something that is pretty interesting. A few years ago, they announced that they were going to start researching and creating a device that you can implant into your brain, which feels insane to say that we're at that point in technology. But there was going to be a lot of different uses for it. One of the things that I know a lot of people really focus on was there was going to be this ability to like control a computer with your mind. So like if you wanted to play a song, you could just think it and it would automatically start playing or things like that. Just kind of very crazy, very dystopian, almost like, why are we investing billions of dollars into this? But yeah, that was a couple years ago. Recently, Elon Musk shared that the company is ready to move forward with human trials. And he shared that the first two things they're really going to focus on with these devices is helping people who need help restoring their vision and helping people with little to no ability of operating their muscles. So the way that it's going to work is it's going to be implanted and it'll be connected to neurons and potentially to like your spinal cord, kind of depending on what you need it for. It'll be connected and it can help improve your vision or just mobility. And that is huge. Like, you know, the fact that someone could have this chip, you know, this device implanted and then it can repair their vision or repair mobility. That's massive to me, at least.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I've also heard like implications for like pain alleviation and mm-hmm. things like that, where, you know, look, brain chemistry ultimately can break down to a really advanced sort of circuitry of electric, you know, kind of energy going on in your head, like synapses firing and receptors kind of receiving things. I get people's concerns with the idea of, you know, kind of implanting some sort of digital device in your brain to manipulate how it functions, but it's not, you know, fundamentally too much different than, you know, altering that brain function chemically with drugs that kind of work in very targeted specific ways, theoretically to help people with, you know, pain alleviation mm-hmm. or, you know, if you're suffering from, you know, an ailment where medication helps you, you know, have, you know, improve your motor functions or something like that. You know, I don't think there's any kind of fundamental difference. And look, man, if this can offer people alleviation to some serious neurological issues,
right,
hey, it's cool. Obviously, I understand why people, you know, would be a little, you know, apprehensive, but at the same time, I think there's a lot of promise there.
Right. Yeah. And I agree. Like, I understand there could be maybe some ethical dilemma because obviously this could lead to something else that's controversial. But, you know, I think like I wear glasses every day. I've worn glasses since I was 6 years old. I don't know what it's like to wake up and just be able to see. Like, I don't know what that experience is like. And, you know, there is the opportunity, you know, I could do like LASIK or I guess that's really actually only it. But there is an option for me to improve my vision. And so knowing like, oh, I could also do this to improve my vision, or just anyone, you know, kind of like you said, with dealing with pain or dealing with some sort of ailment, the fact that there could be a solution or something to help repair, I think is just massive.
Just playing music in your head. That was weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not opposed to, I mean, I feel like I sing songs in my head all day long, but I'd rather be able to, like, if I'm going to plant something in my brain, I want it to be able to let me see and get rid of these terrible glasses.
Or your leg paralysis gets healed, you know?
Sure. That's worth it. I guess that's worth it. Yeah.
What else you got?
I want to do a little bit of sort of myth busting, or maybe tweet busting might be the better word for it.
Oh, you're getting into Jesse's lane now.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So earlier this week, there was some conversations going around about CVS. They've been sued for allegedly misusing donation funds. So last year, if you went to CVS at any time, you go to the checkout line and, you know, there's always...
Now.
Can do it now too.
Like it's still... Yeah.
And I ran into this the other... I went into CVS to buy a COVID test. And when I was I did the self-checkout and it said, hey, do you want to round up? And I can't even remember what the cause was.
The ADA, like the American Diabetes Association. They've been doing this for a year. There's a class action lawsuit that has been filed against them, accusing CVS of fraud and not donating the funds that you give to the ADA. So this started a big tweet thing. Emily and I were like, oh my goodness, scandal. We're breaking this wide open.
Yeah.
Right?
Because so many people were talking about it, just like, oh, I can't believe this. You know, I give, you know, 87 cents, whatever it is, to CVS, and they're not using it for what they said they were. So they've been sued for that. And that was a few months ago. The conversation's been going on for a while. But recently, CVS filed a motion to dismiss, saying that the plaintiff who brought the suit up has basically just misinterpreted what was going on. So
what it was is last year, CVS made a commitment to the ADA. We, CVS, the CVS family, is committing $10 million to the American Diabetes Association. Then what they did is, let's go to our customers to participate in this. We'll raise as much as we can from all the customers' donations, and then we will top it off to guarantee at least $10 million is going, right? That was the commitment. And so that, so all of your donations are part of that $10 million that is definitely going to the ADA. And if it exceeds $10 million, it's going to the ADA. The lawsuit is saying, no, CVS, you owe $10 million to the ADA, and all of our customer donations are separate from your $10 million, and you're keeping those, reimbursing yourself. So it's like a mixture of words, but the end of the day is CVS is trying to do the right thing and guarantee a minimum donation, and they're getting sued over it. You know what I'm saying? Nope. Like, that's what I'm saying.
Nope. People are miserable.
Yeah.
They mad. Like, it's like, bro, how frustrated with life can you be that you are reading the contract or the pledge for $10 million to people with diabetes?
Yes. I got a contrarian take here. I got a contrarian take. And a theory. And a theory.
Of course you do.
I think someone at CVS one day, it was probably at the Christmas party, okay? They were feeling loose. They were feeling good. They were in the spirit of the season, and they went Scott Stotts.
Are you going Scott Stotts? I knew you were going
Scott Stotts. They went full Scott Stotts, and they're like, we pledge $10 million. And they're running around high-fiving.
We're going carbon neutral.
Exactly. Yeah. And Mariah Carey comes on, and people are dancing, and it's the greatest Christmas party ever. That guy in the marketing department wakes up with like a Santa hat, like in the hallway on, and like, what happened last night, man, at the CVS Christmas corporate party? And they're like, bro,
you committed $10 million.
You committed to what? The American Diabetes Association. Like, okay. He's like, I got a plan. Don't worry. Don't sweat it. It's a simple roundup. It's a roundup. I'm not asking. I'm simply saying, hey, this is, you know, these socks you're buying here at the checkout are $5.47. You want to round up that 53? No one's going to know. What could possibly go wrong? That's my theory.
The crazy thing to me is like they sat there and said, hey, we're going to give our customers the opportunity to give to this. We believe in it. And they just wanted to make sure, like, what if the customers let us down and they only gave $1 million? We want to make sure that the gift is at least $10 million. So they made the commitment first. That was apparently the mistake. You get sued now for stating the goal or the intentions of the campaign, mm-hmm. the fundraising campaign, is now they're getting sued. It's crazy. It's like, let's discourage other corporations from doing good things, because if you try to do good things, you're going to get sued by miserable people who are going to class action you.
This is a Scott Stotts that's unfolded and someone's trying to keep him honest. What it is. I have no way of verifying that, so don't sue me, CVS.
So at the end of the day, theory. If you get the ADA prompt at your CVS checkout, then, you know, maybe feel good about giving. Don't listen to Twitter, all the naysayers saying they're frauding everybody. They're not. They're giving the money. You're part of a good thing. Live your life. Move on.
You know, wait. They're lithium. They're lithium batteries for the left.
All right. What else you got, Emily?
Great episode.
I don't know what's a hotter take. You saying that CVS Scott's taught everyone, or that you're saying Scott's taught is the greatest episode.
It is the one episode I will never rewatch. I watched it one time. I cannot do it.
And it's an episode for sure. Anyways, moving on from that. The last thing I want to talk about is something that I know I'm freaking out about. Cameron's freaking out about. Hopefully y'all are freaking out about. Lana Del Rey announced that she is dropping her new album in March. It is also arguably the world's longest name for an album. It's called Did You Know That There's a Tunnel Under Ocean Boulevard? It's a full sentence there.
If punctuation gets involved in your album title, it is too long.
Too long.
Yeah.
She did shorten the word boulevard to just BLVD. So
okay.
Thanks, Lana. At the end, she got kind of lazy. But anyways, more importantly than the ridiculous album title, there's a lot of features on there with Father John Misty, Bleachers, a few others. And most specifically, Pastor Judah Smith is going to be on Lana Del Rey's album.
Do we know the context of what his song is?
She had tweeted about kind of like a thank you to a lot of the different collaborators and features on it. And in her thank you to Judah, she said she thanked Judah and Chelsea Smith, quote, for giving me good guidance even when they don't know they're giving guidance, and for letting me record a part of his sermon for this record. So she's gone to the church, from what I can tell, since about 2019. You know, I don't know if she's a regular attendee or not, but she's been photographed there since 2019, at least. So she's been there. She knows Judah Smith and Chelsea, and some sermon
she,
of his.
She said, my pastor, Judah Smith. Right. I mean, she self-identifies as attending church home in L.A. and that she is a congregant and they are her pastor. It's right. Crazy. I had no idea.
I think it's cool that it's a sermon, but wouldn't it be cooler if it was like, yeah, he's actually featured on saxophone on one track. Hey, who knew, man? The guy can wail.
I want it to be a random, like, saxophone in a way almost makes sense. I need it to be like a piccolo, like something just random.
He's got that secret talent, like Parks and Rec dude.
Ron Swanson,
Ron Swanson. Yeah. It's like it's a secret life. Judah Smith is deeply embedded in the music scene in LA and nobody knows it. He's
like the hottest studio sax player in the business right now.
Right.
Like he's on everything, you know? Yeah.
Right. Judah Smith, sax solo. I love it. Lana Del Rey. I am very intrigued to see how this turns out.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Lana Del Rey fan, but obviously her content isn't, you know, safe for little ears always. It's very raw sometimes. And so it's like,
look, I ain't gonna even lie. Sometimes I don't even know what she'd be talking about. Like,
and you know, I don't know if she does either. Yeah. I think sometimes she just says things. Like, even look at the album title. Kind of just feels like almost like a, was it Mad Libs, whatever? You put in words, like nouns, actions.
She's just sitting there at Beth Moore's ranch in Texas, looking at the bees and the trees and just having random thoughts pop in her head. And those become lyrics.
And them joints become songs. Cause I'd be like, it sound good, but I am not following the narrative at all about, is this song? What is this song about? Like, and I'm not even gonna lie. I'll just be like, man, mate, this just might be a little too top shelf for me. I might need to get some.
This might be a little too white.
Right. I wasn't gonna say that. I was just gonna say, you know, I may not be able to get, you know what I'm saying, the whistle pig or whatever. I might need like the Hennessy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Give me some Hennessy, maybe some E&J. So I can get this, because I just think this is a little Woodford, too Woodford reserved for me. You know?
Have you guys ever Have you ever heard that song? It was making the rounds. It makes the rounds every once in a while on Twitter or wherever. And but just to your point of just random lyrics that sound cool, there was an artist in France, and I think it was in the 1960s. He was a big pop star, but he was like frustrated that all of the hit songs were English, and no one in France even knew English. But they were just they'd like the way that a lot of the American pop songs sounded, mm-hmm. and he didn't speak English. But he wrote a whole song with fake English, like words that sounds like he's speaking English, but they're not actually words.
Yes.
And released it in France and became a number one hit. Can yes. I send it? Do you guys want to hear a clip? Bro,
please. I want to hear it. I love when people do stuff like that. Like, that is my favorite. This is great.
I get words aside, it's a good song.
It's actually kind of a banger.
Hey, dude, it's a banger, bro. It's dope with it, too. All
right. But he's saying words that sound like they're English. And if you're not a native English speaker, like, I don't know, sounds like an American pop song. And it's just him speaking like English gibberish. And I love it. Yeah.
So that's your preview of the new Lana Del Rey album. Plus Judas Smith's sax solos. Yeah.
You know. What do you think the sermon's about?
I don't know. That's what Judas Smith's sermon could possibly match up to a Lana Del Rey song. The possibilities are endless, really. But...
I am so excited. All right. That'll do it for The Buzz.
And I won't understand any of it.
Make sure to follow relevantmagazine.com all day. We're covering the intersection of faith, life, culture, and justice. Thanks, Emily. All right. Stay tuned. Up next, Bits and the Tantrums join us.
Wish I could start this over. Say the things I should have said. I know I feel like I'm a different person. Pull me closer, spin up the silk cocoon.
You're listening to The Rare Occasions. The song is Start This Over. It's Cohen's favorite band.
Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today.
Well, our guest today is the lead singer of Fits and the Tantrums, Michael Fitzpatrick. You've heard their music on the podcast plenty of times over the years. We're big fans. They've been in the magazine as well, and they have just blown up. They have a brand new album called Let Yourself Free. Michael sat down with Emily to talk about the band's new music and what's next for them. Here is our conversation with Michael Fitzpatrick from Fits and the Tantrums.
Well, I am really excited to speak with you about your new album. How does it feel to finally have it out in the world?
I mean, it feels really good. You know, I mean, this is our fifth studio album. So the process is, you know, it's like a year and a half journey, maybe even a little bit more from the start of thinking about making a record to it actually coming out. You work on it for so long, you have to be mean to your own music and throw away half the songs, even though you love them, but you know they're not good enough. And then, you know, as it's leading up to the music coming out, you get all this anticipation and a little bit of anxiety. And then it finally comes out in the world. And that's the moment you're living for. You work so hard and then you put it out in the world. It's just amazing to see people listening to it and reacting and making little videos with it and stuff. I mean, it's the best part, really.
Sometimes it feels like a feather, sometimes it feels like a boulder, sometimes the world makes it easy, sometimes it falls on your shoulders. We stay forever and ever, but we don't.
I love this idea though of you know, you're like curating this theme for each album. I'm curious, in your own words, you know, what, how would you describe the theme for Let Yourself Free?
I think, you know, what sort of emerged from this was this collective experience that we've all had, not just in LA, not just in the United States, but the whole friggin' world. The whole world just walked through a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And what a journey, with so many downs, some surprising ups for me that I was not expecting. And this journey has been so challenging for everybody. Nobody's been able to escape it, whether you're red, blue, you live in an open state, a closed state, China, Europe, you've had to have dealt with this experience.
Right.
And, you know, during those, especially the early part of the pandemic, you know, I was doing like performing on Good Morning America in my backyard at 4:30 in the morning because I had to be live singing to thousands of graduating seniors who are all on Zoom looking at me performing in my backyard for a national television show. I mean, so hoopty, like literally a light bulb on a string in my backyard. We play at 4:30 in the morning. Then I run inside the house and we turn off all the lights and pretend like we're not there, because I've just been belting at 4:30 in the morning out in my neighborhood and waiting for the cops to come shut it down. So many weird things about that time, but so many missed opportunities, so many missed weddings, delayed weddings, missed graduation, didn't get to have their senior year, didn't get to have that freshman year college experience, you know, not having family, so much lost community and family. And I just feel like this record, you know, we were debating on, at the end of the day, two of the titles as the song, as the title of the album, and we have the opener opening track that's called Good Intentions, and then there's Let Yourself Free. And at the end of the day, it just came back to, it had to be Let Yourself Free, because this is about a celebration of going out and doing all the things. We've all been cooped up for so long. We've all held back. We've all lost so much. So this is the moment to like shake off those cobwebs and chase those things you want and go be the fullest, best version of yourself. Let yourself free.
I get that theme from the album. Like when I listen to it, it does feel like a shake things off. Let's move, like, let's get going again. So I love that. I think that's a great message, especially like you said, coming out of this pandemic and just everything we've dealt with. What was it like as an artist dealing with lockdown and pandemic? Like how did that kind of affect your creativity, if it did at all?
I was on tour. The last couple of shows of our tour got shut, cut short, and came home. And for me, you know, as a touring musician, you know, there's all this fear as it started. You know, I randomly, strangely, happened to be an avid historian of the Spanish flu of 1918.
Oh.
So when this thing started to emerge, that's why I was like, to my wife, I was like, go do that big shop, you know, now. But as the world got shut down, once the NBA got shut down, I was just like, oh, this is happening and this is going to be 2 years minimum. And everyone was like, you're crazy. I was like, well, you mark my words. And every single one of my friends has come back and was like, you were the only one that said the truth in the first early 3 to 6 months of the pandemic. But for me, the crazy thing was, so I'm stressed out. I'm like, okay, I'm not making any money. I can't tour. I can't perform. This is how I make a living. All this stress. You had literally the hills of LA burning on fire. And we had had crazy floods, rains before that. Then you've got all this like social unrest, Black Lives Matter. It feels like the world's melting before our very eyes and disintegrating. So there's all this external stress, all this environmental stress, all this financial stress. And yet at the same time, for me, as a guy who's been on the road nonstop for 14 years, it was the first time in 15 years that I got to go to bed in my bed every day, wake up in my bed every day, see my kids for breakfast and drop, you know, every morning, put them to bed and give them a kiss goodnight every night. You know, for me, after the first 2 weeks, that was a world's record of me being at home uninterrupted. So to have like a year plus of just being at home, focusing on my wife and my family, I mean, it was a stressful time, but it was also, for me, given my career, kind of the best time of my life.
I'm gonna be a big deal, be a big shot. Don't think too small, don't put me in a box. I'm a big deal, I'm a big shot. Make them stop.
One thing that I just always love to ask artists before they leave, who are you listening to these days and where are you kind of getting some inspiration from?
You know, the interesting thing for me as a guy that works with music all day, plays shows and stuff, is for many, many years, I didn't even own a home stereo. Because when I'm not on stage or I'm not in the studio, the last thing I want to do is listen to music. My ears, they're muscles like anything else. You've used them all day long. You're not, if you go lift weights all day long, you're not going to go home and lift more weights. And that's right. What it's like for a musician when you're asked to listen to music, and we're always having to use our brain power to process all sound we hear. So for the longest time, I didn't even listen to anything, but I have a wife and kids that love music and love dance, house dance parties and stuff. And we were locked in the house. So I kind of had to get back and fell back in love with listening to music. My two artists of the pandemic, especially the first part that saved me and my wife and we live by, were Remy Wolf.
And, yes, absolutely.
And Bakar, B-A-K-A-R, who's a British singer, rapper, who is so diverse and so talented. And then this year, I've been super into Dijon, is another guy that made an amazing record. I'm a sucker for pop music, so I'll listen to Dua Lipa or Doja Cat or anything any day of the week. But honestly, the record that I've loved the most this year, and I wanted to hate this record, like I was determined to poo-poo this record, and I couldn't because it's so friggin' good, is Harry's House by Harry Styles. I love that record. It's so good.
That was Michael Fitzpatrick. Make sure to check out Fitz and the Tantrum's new album, Let Yourself Free. About now. All right, stay tuned. Up next, it's your feedback. Listening to The Arcs. The song is Keep On Dreaming. Okay, it's time for your feedback. Last week, we asked, you know, it's Christmas season. So we wanted to know the most disappointing or worst Christmas gift you've ever received. You hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast. And here's a few of our favorites.
Josh says that he got socks and $3 from his great grandmother when he was 9. And he's never forgot about it. Now, the socks I get. Okay. I feel like I remember a sock Christmas for all the grandkids. You know, it was
$3.
No. It's the increment of $3. Well, seems no. Intentional.
No, I know what it is. She had a $5 or a $10 budget for every great grandkid, right? And so she spent $7 on the socks and just gave him the remainder, so all the gifts were equal. You
know what I'm saying? I don't know. It seems like a mistake. I think she accidentally dropped it in the bag or the box with the socks. $3 seems too random to give as a gift.
That's really funny.
I got everybody socks for Christmas when I was a broke college student. And listen, Joyce Hawkins, my mother, and Destiny Parker, my sister, who will not let me live that down for the rest of my life. I promise. Like, you, my mom literally, we was on the phone yesterday, and she says, I'm not buying anybody a gift. Matter of fact, all I'm getting everybody is socks for Christmas like you did for me last time. I was like, oh my God.
But real talk, Derek, you know she's rocking them socks, because socks are one of those things.
They were some good socks. They was fluffy and furry.
I'm sure they were. I'm sure he didn't go for, you know, just like the Walmart bag. Like, I'm sure these were
Derek. Tell me the truth.
A big bag of socks.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth. Did you buy them at Walgreens or CVS? Did you get them in that checkout line? Because sometimes they have those last minute random Christmas gifts.
It was Walgreens. I'm a man of I am a man of high character. It was Target.
Okay. All right.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. It was Target.
Listen, Derek, and here's why I'm going to state a short case why socks are an actually incredible gift. Here's another take, guys. Okay. I'm not even bringing this. This is why I'm not on Twitter. I got to preserve
this. I'm going to send this to my mama. Look,
open any socks drawer. Okay. I'm speaking from experience here. There are maybe five pairs of actual usable socks in there. Either there's a whole one, there's weird dress socks or like novelty socks that are off to the side that someone got you like, oh, you like, you know, this sports team? I'm going to buy you these socks. Yeah, you might wear to bed every once in a while, but they're not going to work in the normal vibe. It's a tight rotation at the end of the day when you're talking about usable socks. Okay. You might have a whole drawer full.
Right.
But when we're talking no holes, they fit up on the ankle well. It's a good fit. I'm talking it's a tight rotation, and you're lying if you're telling me it's wrong. The other thing is, no one thinks about buying socks. No one's like, I need to go sock shopping today, or I'm out. There's socks on the list. You only think about your need for new socks when you're at the end of the rotation.
Come on.
Therefore, if someone just gives you them, it opens up the rotation and you don't need to think about it anymore. Am I wrong here?
No, you're not wrong. So take that, mom.
The most adult, lavish, splurge thing I ever did for myself, self-care. This was during the pandemic. I was like, you know what? I emptied out the stock drawer that you just described, Jesse. I was like, I don't need all these randos. I don't know where the half of them are. I literally got rid of all those socks and went to bombas.com and got myself only premium Bombas perfectly fitting socks. And all I have in my sock drawer is Bombas. It is the most bougie thing about my life is my sock drawer right now, because I agree with you. Nothing like a good pair of socks.
It's not the most bougie thing, but it's a bougie thing.
But nothing like a good pair of luxury socks on your feet. I'm saying, I agree with you, Jesse. All right.
It's true. So, Derek, kudos to you. Kudos to you. I guarantee she's wearing them socks. She's wearing them. If she didn't like them, she don't have to wear them.
All right, back to the feedback. All right. Twyla Kuntz said it was the 90s. She was 18. She got a purple and teal nylon tracksuit. Not too bad. Until her mom went into her closet and pulled out the exact same one. Her mom claims she accidentally bought them matching tracksuits. But the Christmas gift was matching tracksuits with your mother when you're 18 years old. That's pretty bad.
All right. So listen, I'm not going to do feedback, but I'm just going to tell my pain story.
Do it.
Because mom... Just for the socks, I got to get you back. So look, I'll never forget this as long as I live. I was 11 years old. It was my birthday. My birthday is December 16th. Mom had already had Christmas presents under the tree, right? And we also had, what was it? Like, you know, Christmas at school. So like you had to give your friends gifts or whatever. Mom comes home after working real hard. Now, my mom worked real hard. She used to work like 40, 50 hours a week. But she come home and she forgot my birthday. She goes under the Christmas tree, gives me one of the gifts from under the Christmas tree. But dig this, she also forgot to get the gift for the person at school. So I had to give up another one of the gifts because all the stores was closed by the time she got home. So I let her have it.
It sounds like to me that the sock thing, you're reframing the story here.
It might be passive aggressive. payback.
That's what it was. The sock thing was a passive aggressive payback.
I'm questioning if you even got those socks from Target.
Revenge socks.
That was revenge socks
for forgetting your birthday.
He sounds like they were purchased at a store that clothing isn't the primary thing they sell. You know, it could be the CVS checkout.
It's on
that.
It was like a AutoZone or something.
Yeah. Mom forgot my birthday. I forgot mom's Christmas present. I'm at the CVS checkout. Here's some socks. That's it.
I was on a road trip at a truck stop and bought you some socks.
Truck stop socks.
We give each other problems every year. I just let y'all into one of the funnest jokes. Like, we go back and forth on this for days. So
Bucky socks.
Bucky socks. That's
some Quick Trip socks. That's what she's got this year.
Yeah. I got these from QT and with the $3 grandma left me, I got a big goal. $3 is actually real talk. I was thinking about this while we were ranting about the sock.
It's useful,
thing.
Bro. $3?
If you find $3 in your wallet, you're like, I'm buying a snack today.
Yeah.
I am getting a cold drink or a snack. If it's $5, you're like, I should probably hold on to that $5
right.
bill.
You're
you know
right.
what I mean? Probably $3 is actually the perfect increment
true.
Where you guilt-free spend it on some chips or something.
That's
am
true.
I wrong?
No,
it's a
right.
great increment. If you reach in your pockets, everyone's stoked to find a 20, but you know that 20 is a 20. You're not just going to go blow it.
Right.
You're going to save it. You reach in, you find $3. It's like, I'm spending $3 today. I know that. Vending machine, here I come.
Exactly. That is interesting. That's true, though. Yeah.
It's the perfect increment.
All right. Well, that'll do it for last week's. There's more where that came from. Go hit the replies on Relevant Podcast on Twitter. Okay. It's time for this week's
editorial question of the week.
We were talking, you know, Beth Moore, Twitter, and self-owns and Twitter burns, tweet burns, and... alpha males and all that stuff. We want you to send us your favorite Twitter burn that you've ever seen. Maybe it was like a funny insult. Maybe it was a cell phone. Maybe it was we want to know your favorite Twitter burn. You know, you screenshotted it. You know, it's in your photos. Just send that on in. That's what we want. Hit us up on Twitter at Relevant Podcast. And, or you can hit us up on IG as well.
This is going to be interesting.
I saw a great one out in the wild this week. It was just because it was just unexpectedly savage. Like, you know, those stories that come up every once in a while. I feel like it's a running joke in this pod. And the headline was like, it was something along the lines of 101-year-old man reveals that his daily Coors Lights are secret to longevity. And like Coors Light, tweeted out this headline from this old guy who lived. And Sam Adams replied, interesting. We heard it's always good to drink a lot of water. Just savage.
Very good.
Just savage from like grocery store, beer brands.
Pretty good.
If you're on Twitter and you put something out there, you got to be ready for the burn.
Wendy's is still up there as the brand burns and humor goes. Wendy's is still on it. They had a moment, but they sustained it. Good for them. Anyway, all right, hit us up. Yeah. Send us in your favorite Twitter burns. Well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank Michael Fitzpatrick for joining us today. Make sure you check out Fitz and the Tantrum's new album, Let Yourself Free. It's available now. Also, I mentioned the podcast playlist earlier in the show, right? Well, if you're in the mood for some Christmas music, we got a little gift for you. A Very Relevant Christmas playlist is also available on Spotify. It's like 200 and something songs and no Mariah Carey. It's a good list. I have it on shuffle in my car, like nonstop. You should go check it out. Also, make sure to visit relevantmagazine.com every day for the latest at the intersection of faith, culture, life, justice. Lots of stuff happening. And make sure to follow us on all the socials as well. I don't know if you've noticed, but we've been posting a whole lot more stuff lately. It's fun. We got some things cooking. We got some things cooking for 2023. Okay, on that note, we'll wrap it. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Derek Miner.
I'm Emily Brown.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
I'd have no way of verifying that, so don't sue me, CVS. It's a theory.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save